rolling.
Damn, what's this shit?
Prepare for a gopher football knowledge bomb. This is the FBT podcast with hosts MV.
Oh, that's pretty damn good. I like it. That's pretty good.
Are you starting to believe, folks? I am starting to believe. Hello, everybody, again. Welcome back to the FBT podcast. This is MB. I'm joined by the three-headed Cerebrus of FBT, Frothy Gopher.
What up?
And Elliot Man Ship.
What's going on?
We are 4-0. Repeat those words over and over and over again. The Gophers are 4-0. We are one of only three unbeaten teams in the Big Ten. We are the most surprising 4-0 team in the country. And even more shockingly, we are 4-0 because we play defense, we have a defensive line, and we have a real secondary. I'm 12, and what is this?
Yeah, it's going to be tough for me to make it through the whole podcast since I was screaming my balls off last night. But it was first of all, whatever it is that the U was doing with Hail Teague, our Dionysian genius, kill the whole athletic department, really, for getting some buzz around this program, because the stadium was as great as it has been since the first night in the Air Force Academy game. So hats off to the students for showing up. They were absolutely representing. When Gangnam Style played, about midway through the break between the third and the fourth quarter, that place absolutely erupted. And I got to be honest with you, I just discovered Gangnam Style last week, so I'm about 6 months behind the curve on it. But apparently the kids today think it's pretty awesome. But yeah, to your point, Matt, we're 4-0. We're 4-0 behind a defense that, to your point, I mean, we're getting sacks. We're getting turnovers, interceptions. We had, I think, nine turnovers or nine interceptions all of last year. And in the first four games, we've got nine interceptions already. So we've equaled our interceptions total. We've got to be pretty close to equaling our turnovers total. We're pretty close to equaling our sacks total. And we've already surpassed our wins total. Things are looking really, really good. And it's getting to the point now where you can't just say, well, we've had a cream puff schedule. Yeah, we've had a cream puff schedule, but some other teams have had a pretty easy schedule, i.e. Iowa, and have come out of it, 2-2. So I'm getting more and more optimistic. It's getting tougher and tougher to not be a believer. Doesn't mean there's still not a lot of room for improvement, because there is. But I got to tell you, I couldn't have asked for a better game than we got last night.
The defense was first off, the crowd, I don't remember the last Gopher game I watched where they had multiple false starts due to crowd noise. If you guys can remember offhand, definitely jump in. But I don't remember an atmosphere like that. I can't remember. But the defense, and granted, the defense I think still has some holes, and we'll probably get into that later. But just to see, I mean, that play Derek Wells made in the second half right before Aaron Hill's interception was just fantastic. It was a sweep, I think like a second and one. He was going to the side, the Syracuse back was going to the sideline, and Wells came across and nailed him for a loss of about three or four. And that's a play that I just don't think we've seen in at least, the last couple of years. This defense has just been out of control. I did want to say one thing. One of the running backs from Syracuse was Prince Tyson Gully. All right, and he was born in 1992. So I'm thinking now, was he born after both Prince and Mike Tyson? Because Prince Tyson, his first name is hyphenated. And I looked this up way too much, but he was born in May 1992. At that point, Prince's album that just came out in 91 was Diamonds and Pearls. So he was very well known. You know, Purple Rain had been out, all that stuff. And Mike Tyson was convicted that year in March of rape. So it wasn't – there's no – I mean there cannot be a way that his parents had no idea that there were other Princes and other Tysons. I mean that's like if, you know, now if you named your kid OJ, it wouldn't be like, oh, it was a family name. It was like, well, he was that football player. We just thought it sounded cool. Is he possibly – was that running back possibly named after Prince and Mike Tyson after both of their most infamous career periods? And that was something I could – I don't know if you guys had looked at that, but that was something that totally just was a mind fuck for me.
I got to tell you, Elliot, I spent about 0% of the last time.
That is a very astute observation. That is not one that I would made. You know, I think that I probably would have to name my kid something like something similar, maybe like Vince Neil Sandberg, you know, or something like that. I don't know. I mean, that we're going to go off on a little bit of a tangent there. But this is what this is where we've come with this defense, especially this defensive line. I'm now to the point where every time we get into a third and greater than five, I'm expecting the defensive line to get a sack. I expect them to bring down the opposing quarterback. I do not expect opposing offenses, no matter how good their quarterbacks are, no matter how good their wide receivers are, to not be able to convert on this defense. You know, White Speed Receiver sent me a DM on Twitter asking, when is it getting to the point where are we getting to the point now with this defense where it's no longer can Minnesota's defense handle XXX? And are we moving to the point where we're saying, how is opposing offense going to beat YYY? And I think it sort of happened last night when, I mean, Nassib, all we heard about was how awesome Nassib was, how awesome, you know, Lemon and Mark Sales were, how this was just one of the best passing offenses in the nation. You've got an offense that put up almost a billion yards against Northwestern and gave USC all they could handle, and for 59 minutes of this game, they looked pedestrian at best. Nassib was rattled. He couldn't get anything off. He clearly wanted no part of our front seven because he slid every single time he got past the line of scrimmage. It didn't even matter if he got when he stood in the pocket. He was getting hammered from inside and out. Hats off to the defensive line again. Optimus Prime forces a fumble. He creates push up the middle, which frees the defensive ends to be able to converge in the pocket. Will Hyde and Amafulu played out of their minds again. I mean, this is now a trend. This is now convergence on reality. We play two passing offenses, each progressively better than the previous ones, and the opposing quarterbacks play like crap. And if you look at some of the quarterbacks that the Gophers have played, and notice what they've done when they haven't played the Gophers, they're starting to be an effect. Nick Sherry apparently doesn't suck when he's not playing the Gophers because he's passing for almost 300 yards a game now, and they actually and UNLV actually just upset Air Force, and they gave Washington State a pretty good game. So start to believe, people. This defense is real. This passing defense is amazing. This is one of the top two or three passing defenses in the Big Ten, if not top two, along with Michigan State. And I can't believe I'm saying this. And I never thought I would be able to say this going into the season.
No, I mean I'll just come right out and say, Matt, that sometimes your opinions border on the homerish, which shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. You know, what with the fact that you run a Gophers blog, but I will not disagree with you on that one. And I know people hate it. Certain commenters really hate it when we agree with each other, but when you're speaking the truth, I'm not going to take a counterpoint just for the sake of taking a counterpoint because that's fucking lame.
No, you have to yell. We're doing a Stephen A. Smith, Skip Bayless. We have to scream at each other now.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I feel like that niche has already been satisfied by all of the crap that ESPN puts on. So I'm just going to speak the truth, and where I agree, I'll agree. But no, our pass defense right now is absolutely rock solid. And it's not just like in 2009 when we had Willie Van de Stieg, right? Or was that 2008? I don't even remember anymore. Where we had one guy who was able to get double-digit sacks, and that changed the dynamic. Really, it's a few guys, right? Some of whom are getting a lot of credit, like D.L. Wilhite and Rashid Hageman. Some of whom are really just there disrupting things, like Roland Johnson. Michael Omefiela, though, he's getting some good numbers as well. Really, a lot of the credit is going toward Optimus Prime and D.L. on the line, and then Derek Wells and Michael Carter in the secondary. But it is a full complement of guys out there doing this. It's the full line rotation, the Gopher defensive line Bukkake, slightly less Bukkake going on in the secondary, but you're still seeing Cedric Thompson and Brock Vereen. Brock Vereen, who was responsible for putting pressure on Nassib on that interception by Aaron Hill at the one-yard line, came in on a beautiful blitz, just destroyed Nassib, which caused him to throw that duck up there that Hill was able to dive underneath. But, no, this is a full complement of guys, and it's worth noting this as well. You know, on the defensive line, there's one senior, right, and there's two juniors. So the opportunity for this line to be even better next year is fantastic. But I don't want to sit here and hope for next year, because as it turns out, we got a pretty good thing going right now. But I wouldn't go so far as to say we are the top pass defense in the Big Ten. I would definitely put us in the top three at this point.
And looking back from last year, what do you guys think has been the biggest change? I mean, it doesn't even – like D.L. Wilhite, I have no idea what he has done, what he has been taking, what he's been lifting. I don't want to know. I just want him to keep doing it. He's a completely different player. I mean, he's completely different. Hageman is fantastic. But like you said, it's been Omefiela has been there. Roland Johnson had a very nice game as well. The front four has just been completely solid. What do you guys attribute that to? Is it just another year in the same system and everyone kind of – they were that young last year? Is it a system thing? Is it people kind of just growing into their body finally? What do you guys really think it is? Because I have no idea what it is, but it's been really fun to watch. It's a lot more fun to watch a college football team that wins like this, I guess, than the team from the last couple of years. But
so I think that it is a combination of everything that you just mentioned. We played two true freshmen at defensive end last year, and Wilhite was sort of benched for those guys last year. And I think, on behalf of him, it's kind of a motivating factor when you're going into your senior year and you've been told basically for 18 months straight that you're going to lose your job and your playing time to this young kid. And mm-hmm. It's a huge motivating factor. So the light bulb is sort of turned on. He's committed himself in the weight room and in practice to going all out 100% of the time and playing to the level of his capability. And it's absolutely showed in the first four weeks of this particular season, but really even going back, I think, to the Northwestern, I think I had a stat in the first couple of weeks that Hageman and Wilhite had combined for something ridiculous like 4.5 sacks going back into the Northwestern game of last year through the first two games. Well, I mean, you just keep adding to the tally now of sacks that these guys are able to produce and pressure that they are generating up front. But also, yeah, they're bigger. They are faster. I think the biggest thing by far is that they're more athletic at almost every single position. Roland is a huge disruptor. He's, I think, more athletic and a load to handle just because he's has such a low center of gravity and plays with such great leverage and pad level that it's tough for defense opposing offensive guards and centers to get underneath him. Amafula is a year older and stronger and has understand the system, understands what he's supposed to do. You could say the same thing. I mean, a guy we haven't really talked about all that much is Cameron Botticelli, and he was generating some good pressure, and he got some really good when they were running some slants in there that generated some disruption from the running game and also got some pressure on Nassib. I mean, it's a total team effort with this. I mean, every single one of these guys is kind of like to use a Kevin Garnett term here, these guys are like junkyard dogs. I mean, they are just rabid in their pursuit of going after opposing quarterbacks. But again, another factor of this, then what we can't take away and we can't not mention is the fact that our secondary is so solid in coverage and there's so little drop-off in talent, athleticism, and speed from Wells to Thompson, Vereen, Carter, Studemeyer, Balthazar. I mean, these guys are all good. And they all have a level of competence that we haven't seen in forever. This is the best collection of Gopher defensive backs that I have ever watched. I mean, even back when we had Tyrone Carter, I do not think that we had a combined secondary that it was as good as this one. Even when we had three guys in that 2008 defense that ended up playing in the NFL, I don't think that they were as top to bottom good as this group. And that makes a huge difference because the secondary and the line feed off each other. The secondary gets coverage, helps get coverage sacks, and then the defensive line also helps bail out the secondary. So it just makes it very difficult for opposing quarterbacks to do anything on a 5 or 7 step drop.
Yeah, I think the major difference between what we see in the secondary now and maybe what we saw in 2008 with Big Play Trey and Tremaine Brock and Marcus Sherrills, we've got a lot more depth this time. So you're able to see it's not just a couple of good cornerbacks and a good safety. We've got arguably three, decent BCS level safeties back there that are able to play. We've got two probably mid to upper third cornerbacks and two more in Body and Shabazz, who has been out with a dislocated toe, that are at least serviceable. We didn't have that in the 2008 squad. So our ability to rotate guys through, keep them fresh, and not have a major drop-off as we're giving guys a breather, I think is a testament to how well we've been recruiting here and the player development that Hill has done in the year and a half or 2 years that he's been here. So, yeah, I think you're right, and it's good for us. I'm pretty happy about it. It certainly creates, to your point, Matt, on 3rd and 5, it creates a different set of emotions when you're not afraid to look and you're just making noise while closing your eyes. You're actually excited to see what the defensive line is going to do when given the opportunity. One thing I do want to mention here, and we haven't mentioned them yet, is the linebacker play. And yesterday I thought the linebacker play was much, much improved. We've been ripping them pretty hard for the first few podcasts that we've done here, and they've been maligned across the Gopher Intertron. But I thought Aaron Hill played an outstanding game yesterday. He was repping the GT51 jersey. I thought Cooper played a great game as well. He seemed to be around the ball quite a bit. And we rip him pretty hard, but I thought Rawls actually had a pretty decent game as well. Didn't see quite as much of Reeves. I know Beal was in for a couple of series, but by and large, he's been out as we face these passing teams. But I do want to call out the linebacker specifically for, I thought, playing a much better game yesterday.
I thought Cooper, and I don't mean to disagree now, just after literally 5 minutes after we were just talking about disagreeing more. But Cooper, I thought, missed a couple tackles. And I felt like there were a couple times where he was either a little bit late to the ball or he was almost kind of contact averse, where he, it was kind of, he wasn't just getting in there and ready to blow up a play. I felt like there were a couple times he was kind of contact averse. I think there were a couple times where he didn't really blow up the play. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm wrong often, it seemed as though we were in pass coverage a lot more in nickel coverages, so maybe the linebackers weren't as big of a there weren't as many linebackers on the field. But I'm still concerned about going forward with the run defense as far as I thought James Manuel played well again, but going ahead to Iowa, and I don't mean to just completely step past Syracuse, but what do you guys think about the linebackers going ahead to Iowa as far as, do you think Iowa's going to look at the defense right now and say, well, let's try to run on these guys, because the pass defense has been really solid? I mean, looking at the Gophers' defense, I feel like teams, I guess if I was a team going as the Gophers, I would try to run it down their throats as much as I could. Smith and Gully on Syracuse averaged 5.8 and 4.8 yards respectively, or combined at 19 carries for 100 yards. How do you think Iowa's going to move ahead this Saturday, or how do you guys think other teams will really kind of combat that now that the Gophers seem to have a pass rush and have a very solid secondary?
So to answer your question, yes, the team was in more nickel yesterday. And I think that is a bit of a testament to the fact that we didn't give up a whole crap load of yards on the ground was indicative of better linebacker play. I think that especially James Manuel made a really nice play, an open field tackle that helped stop a drive. Mm-hmm. And I think he's been by far the most aggressive linebacker we have and probably our best linebacker so far. But, yeah, Aaron Hill had his moments yesterday. I mean, he definitely redeemed himself and played a very good game with the GT, you know, honoring GT51. Yeah, he's still good for a dumb penalty every single game. The penalty that he made, you know, on a late hit that ended up where he ended up redeeming himself twice on that drive shouldn't have even happened at all. The drive was stopped. We had backed up Syracuse, and the play was dead, and he had to go and have that late hit. But, you know, I will once again pick on Rallis because I don't think that he did much of anything in this game. It is definitely an issue. It's going to be an issue going against the Iowa's white speed fullback who's managed to run for about 40,000 yards over the last 2 weeks. And I'm guessing we're gonna see more of Brendan Beal. And Brendan Beal, to Frothy's point, did get in some action yesterday. He's a lot more physical. He was not afraid of contact and get in there and attack some, you know, guards and tight ends. And I think we're gonna need that. We're gonna need somebody to come up and fill the hole against this gigantic, you know, automaton that Iowa is trotting out at running back now. And it's gonna be an issue. If I'm an opposing offensive coordinator in the Big Ten, I'm going to make Minnesota's front seven prove that they can stop the run. I'm going to make them prove it. And part of the reason why this is going to be difficult is that we play with those wide nine splits. So when our defensive ends are when you're going against two tight end sets, they're going to line up outside of the tight ends because they want to generate as much pressure on the quarterback as possible. So that leaves some fairly wide gaps for opposing running backs to run through, especially if you start doing other things like you start doing belly traps and start pulling your guards over and getting some more bodies in the hole to get a hat on a hat and get one-on-one opportunities for your running back to run through. But that's an issue that Clays is going to have to address, because it's clear through four games that if you put this particular defense in the opportunity where they can generate pressure and they can pin their ears back, you're not going to have a whole lot of success. I mean, Syracuse, Syracuse really had trouble throughout the entire game, just even getting into any sort of offensive flow, and it took them until 59 minutes to even get a touchdown. Granted, some of that was aided by turnovers, but again, in the situation where Hill picked off the interception, they should have been off the field already. And, you know, fumble recoveries, as we all know, are random. They're sort of 50-50 about how you recover. I mean, we recovered both of ours, but yeah, I think moving forward, that's going to be the challenge.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not as concerned about it at this point, namely because the one sort of run-first team that we've seen was UNLV, and they did okay, but it's not like they, you know, ran for 350 yards against us and piss-pounded us into submission. I mean, they scored points because we made mistakes and let them score points. They got some yardage, but it wasn't anything, you know, of much concern. And they're an effective running team. Are they Iowa? No, probably not. Do they have anyone who's even comparable with Wiseman? Absolutely not. But Wiseman is a walk-on, right? So let's not inflate him up into, you know, Ron Dayne or, you know, Sean Green type levels, because he's not that. Is he going to be able to run against us? Probably. But I don't think you can really compare how we've schemed defensively against Western Michigan and Syracuse, because those are two no huddle. Let's get 70 to 90 plays out each game, and let's keep the defense on their heels. Well, that's not Iowa at all. I think whereas we've had personnel in there probably to defend against the pass first, I think we're going to see some defensive changes, like bringing Beal in more often, like rotating safeties through to make sure that we've got an extra man in the box to stop the run. So where we probably won't be in nickel except in very obvious passing situations against Iowa. That may leave us open to the play action pass, but I've got enough faith in our defensive line and our defensive backs to be able to cover that and ensure that we're not exposing ourselves too much. But I'm not overly concerned about our run defense. Is it a weakness? Yeah, probably, because our linebackers are not terribly aggressive, and we do have the wide nine splits on the defensive line, which will open up some running lanes. But I think even in a nickel coverage, we've done a very good job, by and large, of keeping the running backs in front of us, not letting them get too far upfield. I think there was one long run yesterday. And so I'm not as concerned as I think others are, because I'm not reading too much into our ability or to our lack of run defense against pass first teams. That's just, you're going to make sacrifices, and one of the sacrifices is you're not going to torch us with the pass. We're going to make you run it. We made them run it. We won the games. So that's a victory in my mind. So I'll be in Iowa next week. I'll be there watching the game. So if I'm a filthy liar and Wiseman runs for 350 yards, I'll have a long, long drive back to Minnesota thinking about how so terribly wrong I was.
That is a long drive too. I mean, granted, I live in the part of North Dakota where I don't even think there's missile silos where I'm at. And driving down to Iowa is a lonely haul. There is nothing out there. But one thing with the defense, what I do like about the defense going into Iowa game, Vandenberg is very similar, I think, to Nassib as far as not being a mobile quarterback, having a big arm. And I feel like the defense, ate him up. And so going into Iowa, I think that's another situation that looks very advantageous for the Gophers.
Yeah, Vandenberg, the Greg Davis offensive conversion has been an absolute disaster for Iowa. I mean, Greg Davis was trying to bring this sort of, quick, no-huddle, shotgun, almost sort of spread-type passing concepts from Texas that Colt McCoy and wide receiver, ran to perfection and ran all the way to the national championship game where they just got destroyed by Alabama. They're trying to bring that type of passing game. So it's almost like West Coastian in a way. And Iowa's wide receivers in Vandenberg just are not taking to this particular offense all that well. Vandenberg was touted as the best pure pocket passer returning in the Big Ten among the quarterbacks at this season. And he has the second lowest rated He's the second lowest rated passer in the Big Ten heading into this game through qualifying. The only one worse is Andrew Maxwell at Michigan State. And it's sort of been a nightmare. I mean, Iowa has to be apoplectic right now at how bad they've been just across the board and how they seemingly find ways to lose basically everything. I mean, they're losing to teams in ways that you wouldn't expect a Ferentz coach team to lose, but given the fact that this is what you're going to expect when you have so much transition at offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, you're switching your offensive line coach over defensive line, you're making all of these changes, and how can you expect personnel that were not recruited to play this sort of thing to do all that well? I mean, this is not your traditional Iowa offense. Iowa's offense has always been sort of play action. They're going to run. They may not run it all that effectively because of the angry Iowa running back in God. But in the off chance that they do manage to slip one through where they have a really good tailback, that they've been pretty balanced in their abilities. And they've had some pretty decent quarterbacks down in Iowa City over the last half of the last decade, I would say. But this is not the same Iowa offense at all. They have a lot of challenges that if Clays can scheme properly for this team, I think that they will stifle the Iowa offensive attack and make them basically try and grind things out. And I don't think that they're capable of grinding things out and putting points on the board.
So that kind of begs the question, if we're going to limit their ability to score points, are we going to be able to score points? Matt, Elliot, what did you think of the offense last night?
I was pleased, I guess, with Shortell. I thought there were a couple times where he missed some open passes, or there were a couple slants he had missed or thrown behind the receiver. But I thought, considering you're really kind of switching your offense from having Gray, where he's running so much more, and Shortell, especially if he's your kind of your lone quarterback at this point that isn't being redshirted, you don't want to send him running that often. I was pleased with that. Do I think that Shortell had a great game? Not necessarily. I think they played well enough to win. I think Kirkwood, again, I was completely wrong about him this year. He has been just a solid running back, eats up yards. I also like to see, I saw, KJ May coming in, kind of playing those two running backs off each other. I kind of like that. I like KJ May has been really a pleasant surprise. Wanted to ask you guys, Gillum really didn't play at all much. I don't think he did, but do you guys think that was more of he wasn't used to playing with Shortell as much, like when against Western Michigan they didn't bring in May because they said he hadn't played in packages with Shortell much? Or do you think it was a situation where the coaches were just kind of riding the hot hand and they liked the way that May and Kirkwood kind of played off each other?
I think it's the latter, that May is a change of pace, and he's a different style of running back compared to Gillum, and that between Kirkwood and Gillum, they're basically the same style of tough inside runner, and that Kirkwood is simply outplaying Gillum at this point. Gillum, I don't know if he's banged up or if it's just like we're talking about. He's just too similar to mm-hmm. Kirkwood, and they want to get something a little bit different, give the defense a little bit of a different look. I generally liked what May and Kirkwood were able to do in this game. If I had to give Shortell a letter grade for this game, I would give him about a solid B minus. He looked really good at times. He missed some throws. There was on Devin Crawford Tufts, the throw to Devin Crawford Tufts that ended up getting called for pass interference, and then that brought us down into the red zone again. There was actually a wheel route from Frickty that was wide open, wide, wide open, and Shortell just missed him. That would have been just an easy pitch and catch for a touchdown. There were a number of other throws that I think Shortell got a little bit too, put a little bit too much mustard on it, and just some. I'll talk about it a little bit more in terms of offensive execution. I think it was a bigger issue in this game. But I think that overall, with what Shortell was asked to do, give him a solid B minus. He wasn't perfect. He sort of trailed off in the second half again, but I much of that could be attributed to Lime Grover's conservative play calling philosophy, where now that when they have an 11-point lead and then what's built up to a 14-point lead, there's no point in risking some throws that could be intercepted and giving the momentum back to Syracuse. So that they were just trying to choke the life out of Syracuse and wind the clock down. I was interested in sort of the run formations that we were running. We were running a lot more two tight end sets. We also mixed it up and got brought in Mike Henry, the fullback. So we were running a lot more traps inside. That was an interesting develop. I think that you can do a little bit more of that with Shortell than you can with Gray, because it doesn't make sense to bring in a lead blocker into two tight end sets when you have such a running threat, because that just further stacks people in the box. But the running game was only okay, I would say. The offense overall for me gets like a C+, if I was going to give it a biased letter grade about that. What do you think about that, Frothy?
Yeah, and this is the drunken rube in the stands who hasn't had a chance to actually watch film. So take this for it. I quite frankly, I didn't see an awful lot of difference in the way. I thought that Shortell was close to as effective as Gray usually is. We're able to move the ball while passing it, which I think is great. The thing I was probably most disappointed in is that our increased ability, at least from my perception, to pass the ball was and increased emphasis on passing the ball as well, didn't really open up the running game very much. And that's a concern to me because I think we ended up averaging about 3.8 yards per carry or thereabouts, which is down pretty significantly, if I recall, from where we had been earlier in the season. Now, granted, it's an increase in competition, so that's going to happen. But 3.8 isn't going to be very satisfactory, I think, to consistently have. So where I was expecting to see Kirkwood be able to take over, and he did a great job. I think he ended up with 28 carries for 99 yards or something. We didn't see much effectiveness in getting the running backs to break out some runs to really have an opportunity to bust the game open. That's what I was hoping to see. It didn't happen. Offensively, I think there were a lot of breakdowns, a lot of mistakes, some drop balls, some poorly thrown balls. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. But all in all, I think at the quarterback position, we got what we needed to have. Did he blow everyone away such that, we don't have to worry about who our starting quarterback for the rest of the year is going to be because it's going to be Max Shortell? No, he didn't do enough to displace Gray or do enough to say, wow, he's so much better than Gray and the team is so much more dynamic with him in there playing quarterback. I don't think we saw that at all. I think offensively we were about 80 yards less than what we've been averaging earlier in the season. Again, tougher competition, so take that with a grain of salt. But whereas Shortell came in against Western Michigan and it was a completely different feel on offense, much more dynamic, much more effective in moving the ball quicker. I didn't see that yesterday. I thought he did a good job. I'd probably grade him out as a B, but quite frankly, that's probably where I would grade Gray out most in all three of the previous games. So it is what it is. That's the drunken Rube perception. I hope that Shortell continues to get better. I hope he makes some of those passes that he wasn't able to make yesterday. And I'm putting it on the offensive line to some extent for our lack of ability to move the ball rushing. It didn't feel like we got a lot of push most of the time, at least consistently. And we do have some injuries there, so it is what it is. But I would like to see some improvement for us to be able to consistently get some points on the board against tougher Big Ten teams.
Yeah, and let me just jump in here real quick about the point about injuries along the offensive line. We are pretty banged up front. And it makes a big difference when you're trying to run. From my observation watching the film again this morning, I think we're running power about 80% of the time. And we're no longer running inside zone because I just don't think that we're getting the sort of push that we need. So we're running power as a sort of counter action. We're getting the defensive line flowing one way, then pulling a backside guard over to play side in order to create a hole there. And I think that we're pretty effective at that. So, I mean, Caleb Bach is pretty good at that. And in this particular game, Tommy Olsen tweaked his ankle. So John Christensen had to slide in at left guard. And he actually, I think, did a fairly good job. The most egregious thing that I noted, he'll probably get like negative million check marks for this, was the hold that he had on the play where Shortell threw the bomb to Devin Crawford Tufts that for a touchdown that ended up getting called back. So, but this is sort of what you have to deal with. When you have.
Plus, if he doesn't make that hold, I think Shortell just gets blown up. I don't think he gets the ball off as well,
Probably not. But it's not even just the hold. It's just the fact that he completely missed
the block.
Just missed the block entirely, and so he had to hold. I mean, that's the whole point, is that he's a redshirt freshman, walk-on, playing significant action at left guard. Epping is playing his second game at center, and I think Epping did a very, very good job today. Bach is a former walk-on. He's a sophomore, but I think he's actually done a fairly good job. So, but again, it just proves how banged up we are. You don't want us to start or play Christensen when Tommy Olsen goes down. You want to get the guy who is normally the second team left guard, and that's Joe Bjorklund. You don't want to have to go with, rotating all these guys along the offensive line because of injury-related issues, but that's kind of the what we're dealing with. How much of that is attributed to the sort of not great performance from the running backs in the running game, I would say that plays a significant role. And I also think that Syracuse sort of game plan for this. They were very aggressive. They blitzed a lot. So when you blitz a lot and you're doing a lot of run blitzes, it gets tough sledding for backs, especially when you're running a lot of power, because you're going to get a defender slipping through that particular gap and then get into the backfield. So it is what it is. I'm not really satisfied with the running game in this. I don't think the coaches are going to be satisfied either. I'm not really happy about the fact that there were so many offensive miscues again. I mean, we have so many false starts and illegal procedure penalties that kept points off the board. We're having, if I could move on to special teams again, we're having so many issues with special teams, both in the kicking game and punting. It's just, and our kick return units too are leaving a lot to be desired as well. I mean, we got away with it against Syracuse because we had such a great, inspired performance from the defense. But you can't leave 6 points on the board, 6 points that would have represented an even bigger margin heading into the fourth quarter. And I think Syracuse is about ready to give up if they were down by a 20-point margin, which it should have been. I mean, it should be even more than this. I mean, we should have beaten Syracuse by, we probably should have had about 21 points at the end of the half, but we only ended up with 7. So I guess it is what it is.
So I asked this question after week 1, and I'm going to ask it again. Jerry Kill is personally coaching the special teams units. That he's taken that upon himself to coach those units. Why aren't we seeing improvement? Why are we seeing so much inconsistency? I mean, we have, what, 4 punters on the team right now? 2 kickers? And we can't average over 35 yards a punt? And we consistently miss field. I mean, I can understand an occasional missed 42-yard or 46-yard or whatever that first one was, but you cannot miss a 26-yard field goal and expect to win against competitive teams. And we were fortunate yesterday that our defense played so well that Syracuse wasn't even really competitive on the offset, on the offensive side of the ball. But what is happening? If Jerry Kill, our head coach, is spending so much time with the unit, why aren't we seeing it improve?
That is a great question. I mean, and with Wettstein, that's kind of a sneaky problem in that it doesn't seem like it's that big of an issue, I guess, if you're just watching the game. You know, if you're not watching the game that closely. But he's been very subpar this year so far. And he's one of my favorite stories on the team, you know, with last year. I mean, he broke a freaking tackle to score a touchdown as a walk-on, which is pretty neat. But, and he has the leg strength. He can kick very well at times. But it seems like if he's on one of the hash marks, he's booted to the corner of the end zone. Like, if the ball wasn't set up in the middle, it's really going to be an adventure. And I don't know how that changes unless you just throw Hawthorne in and let him battle back and forth. But it seems like when the punting game kind of starts to do all right, then Wettstein misses a kick. Wettstein hits, Eldred boots one out of bounds. So that's going to be a problem moving ahead in the season for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a real – it troubles me so much. I mean, to DeFrothy's point, there's absolutely no excuse for missing a chip shot field goal inside of 30 yards. You cannot have that in college football. These are points that you simply can't give away. And it's not even –
especially this team when you're having problems on offense.
No, I mean, we simply can't give away points. So it's an issue that needs to be addressed. And to DeFrothy's question, I don't know. I don't know why we're not seeing improvement in the special teams. I don't know why. I don't know why things are not getting better. The only possible explanation I can say in terms of the Aussie, 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 oi, 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 is he's new. This is his fourth game kicking or punting, so he's not necessarily used to what it takes to, you know, be a consistent college level punter. But still, these are the type of situations in which we could come back and bite us in the ass. Because if you look at Syracuse's punter put us back deep several occasions, I mean, he basically saved their offense from when they were doing absolutely nothing against our defensive front, where he would pin us inside inside our 20 quite frequently. So that's definitely an issue. That just shows how much – I mean, we talk about punting all the time as one of these coaching cliches. But this particular game, it did not work to the Gophers' benefit, and it worked to Syracuse's benefit because they were able to sort of pin us back deep when they had to. And I'm the two things – so if I had to run down a litany of the three things that concern me the most about this team right now, it's offensive execution and cleaning up on stupid penalties. Two would be play of the linebackers, and three would be our special teams play. We have to get something more out of these punts, and we have to be able to convert on kicks inside the, 28, 29-yard field goals.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that. I think, and I know the agreement is angering to some folks as well, but apologies. I just happen to think that you're right. Yeah, so we think our defense is good, maybe great against the pass, maybe undetermined as of yet against a big run-first team. Our offense has some challenges, but really, if you just improve the execution and cut out the stupid mistakes, we might be okay. And our special teams is just a raging grease fire. So that's where our team stands. So we're headed to Iowa this weekend, and Iowa just lost to what was widely regarded as a horrific Central Michigan team on a last-second field goal after first recovering an onside kick and then losing an onside kick to Central Michigan after Central Michigan was called for delay of game, which is just delicious in itself. So how are things going to look for us? Are we well-positioned to take Iowa on? We're heading into the Big Ten season now, so the games start to matter a little bit. Are we going to keep Floyd for the third consecutive year?
I will talk about this here and not the Black Heart Gold Pants podcast that I'm going to be joining later this week. So I think the Gophers have a very good chance of keeping Floyd for a third consecutive year. The reason why is because I simply don't see how Iowa is going to score enough points to stay in this game, especially with the way that their offense is going. This is you're not going to expect to get 8 yards per carry out of Weissman every single game, and especially not against a team that actually has non-cadavers for defensive players, unlike Western or Central Michigan. So the challenge is going to be containing Weissman and limiting his yards or limiting his potential impact on Iowa offensive drives, because I simply don't think that the Iowa passing game is clicking enough to be able to go against this defensive line and secondary. And I think that the secondary can effectively neutralize Vandenberg into a fairly bad game. The Iowa's passing offense doesn't scare me. What does sort of scare me in this particular game is that kind of sneakily Iowa's defensive line is pretty good. In fact, Iowa's entire defense is very solid. I mean, they don't give up a whole heck of a lot of yards on the ground or against the pass. Their defensive line is actually kind of like a story much like ours, that they are kind of sneakily good going into this season. Or sneakily good even though they're really young. They're pretty physical. They don't really give up a whole lot. And I think this is going to be a challenge, especially given that we're gonna probably go with Shortell again. And knowing Lime Grover and his philosophy, this is going to be a very conservative game plan again. You're going to see a whole lot of Kirkwood. We're going to see a whole lot of play action. Iowa blitzes more than they used to, so I think they're probably going to go the same route that Syracuse tried to do and blitz Shortell frequently to try and get him rattled. But if we're just comparing the two teams side by side, which team I have more faith is going to be able to score points, it would be Minnesota going against Iowa's defense. And I simply have no faith in, or I shouldn't put it this way, I have the utmost confidence in our defense to be able to limit Vandenberg to next to nothing.
Yeah, I got to say, I think I'm probably more scared than maybe I should be that Weissman's going to have a decent running game. Or I think that's what I would do if I was Iowa. I would throw Weissman down our throats over and over and over again. Just because Vandenberg, like you said, and I would agree with, doesn't really intimidate me, I guess, with this defense. He's pretty much a statue back there. And if this defense can pin their ears back and really get after it, I think it'd be similar to what happened against Syracuse. I think it'll probably be within, like you said, I think it'll be conservative both on both teams at least, just with Iowa as far as they're trying to kind of still get their offense going. They've been so awful so far, so I don't think they have the ability to score many points. And conversely, I just don't think our game plan will be to try to score that many points just because it's been kind of more of a ball control thing so far. I guess I like it to be a touchdown game either way and be a fairly close game. I will say going into the season, I thought this would be a game that would be nice for the Gophers to be able to go in and then kind of sneak in and get one away from Iowa. But at this point, I'd have to think it'd be almost disappointing if the Gophers can't go into Iowa and beat them just with how bad Iowa's been playing so far.
Well, it's hate week, and there's not nearly enough hate going on this podcast right now. So what I would like to see is a Sherman march to the sea, return the favor of 55 donut. Me and 200 of my closest friends storm the field, tear the goalpost down, and drag him kicking and screaming back to Minnesota along with Floyd.
Yes.
I think it's possible. It's possible that we can go in there and absolutely piss pound them. They're defensively reasonably competent, but they still gave up a shitload of points to a pretty bad Central Michigan team. They're offensively very, very challenged when you're rolling with a walk-on fullback as your starting running back going into the game. You've got some offensive issues.
And he's the one thing that's really going right for him.
Oh, that's it. Vandenberg has not been too terribly impressive. And quite frankly, they're a team that, much like Wisconsin, is really trying to find an identity on offense after they brought in a new offensive coordinator. So I think that with the way our defense is playing and with if Shortell plays a good game and can find open receivers and the receivers can catch the ball, I feel like we can really take it to Iowa. And then I will make sure to bring all of the salt with me and just salt the shit out of the land. Just dump bags of salt on Kinnick so all the grass dies and never grows back again. That would be my plan. So I'm going to ride or die with that belief that we're going to go in and absolutely destroy them. And I guess we'll see what happens after that.
Here's what I want to know. What's Jerry's philosophy going to be on the stupid pink locker room that they have down at Kinnick? Because, you know, the genius psychology major Hayden Fry, you know, is Jerry Gill going to put up newspaper on the walls kind of like Bo Schembechler did? Or is he just going to completely ignore it and say, you know what, this is total bullcrap. This is one of these stupid mind games that these Iwegians play, you know, in order to make them distract them from the key issue at hand, which is that Iowa is very beatable. They've lost two games at Kinnick this year, and they quite frankly should have lost to Northern Illinois and didn't look terribly impressive against Northern Iowa. So this is a team that, like you said, Frothy, has definite challenges on offense. They are the opposite of based in the passing offense, so to speak. And this is a game that if the Gophers are going to go bowling, and the consensus here, I think, for everybody is that the Gophers are good enough to win two games in the Big Ten to go bowling, that this is the one that has where we have the best opportunity to do so. This is a wounded Iowa squad. They have a lot of issues. They're going to be stinging from the Central Michigan loss and losing in heartbreak fashion, so to speak. They might be really pissed off. I mean, you could throw records aside, so to speak, because it's hate week. But in terms of who has the better team at this point, I can say without a shadow of a doubt that we have the better team. We're not the healthiest that we could be, but on paper, we are definitely better than Iowa. Yes, I said it. We are better than Iowa on paper.
Yeah, and our friend and neighbor and noted Iowa troll, white speed receiver, a.k.a. Ben Dawson, may have had the tweet that best encapsulates what we're thinking right now and what Iowa fans are probably thinking right now. And that is, if I'm an Iowa fan, I'm hitching my wagon to the better team lost the last 2 years and hoping it happens again. Because that's what's got to be going through Iowa fans' heads right now. On paper, we're a better team, amazingly. And the record books and in the stats, we're a better team. So, we should win this game. Are we going to be favored? Probably not, because people hate us. Although I did notice that we now sit at 48 in the Sagarin rankings, which I think is about 40 or 50 spots up from where we started the year. And I'm not sure if they're well matched yet, but they are probably getting there pretty quickly. So we are now statistically starting to show some improvement. We did get some votes, the others receiving votes in the AP this week. So we're starting to come around. I'd still be surprised if this is more than just a pick 'em. There's still an awful lot of variability in both teams. Hard to really get a solid indication about where each team is at right now. So Iowa may be a 1 or 2 point favorite going into it. That's my bet.
Yeah, I haven't seen the early line from the win, but I've got to think that it's probably either going to be Iowa minus one or a pick 'em. It's definitely one of these games in which could go absolutely either way. I would be surprised if the margin of victory is more than a touchdown on either side. But yeah, the probability of things going, you know, really ugly for Iowa, definitely a lot higher than things getting really ugly for the Gophers. I will say that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're an Iowa fan right now, you're hoping that things are breaking together and all of a sudden your team kind of figures out and you're coming together and whatever other cliche of a Remember the Titans movie you can put together in your head. But they've just been an awful team. I mean, Central Michigan is not a good team, and they were beat by them, much like when the Gophers were beat by North Dakota State. It wasn't a fluke game. They just got outplayed. So I'd be surprised if either team really blew out the other one, but I wouldn't be as surprised if the Gophers did it to Iowa.
And let's just talk about how electric the atmosphere for homecoming will be in 2 weeks if the Gophers do end up bringing home Florida Rosedale for a third straight year. I mean, the atmosphere at the game last night was absolutely incredible, probably to Frothy's point, the best since the stadium opened, and the only other game that's comparable is the Michigan State game on Halloween night. That was just absolutely electric as well. But if they beat Iowa, go to 5-0, and coming off the bye week into Northwestern, a Northwestern team that could also be 5-0 and ranked, that could be a huge, huge setup as a huge, huge game. Almost back to 2008, where both teams came and ranked. Or Northwestern had lost the week before, so they weren't ranked. But this is setting up to be a very fun season. That's basically how I want to end the podcast right there. This is shaping up to be a very fun and enjoyable season. Gone is the angst of 2000 and 2011, where we were gnashing all of our teeth, getting out our razor blades, and just letting it bleed from how bad things were getting and from the losses to North Dakota State and New Mexico State and South Dakota and every other team that we shouldn't have lost to. Things are a lot, lot better now, and I'm happy about that. So let's enjoy it.